You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
In this episode, we are bringing the first of two highlights from the recent seminar given by One Crown Office Row on the scope of duty and causation, Chester and Afshar Revisited. Here we have Jonathan Metzer giving his interpretation of the ruling by the House of Lords.
So my talk is going to be focused on the actual decision in Chester and Afshar itself. And the reason for that is, as you will see, what exactly the court said, the House of Lords, in that decision has been really up for grabs and has been very hotly contested over a number of very recent cases. And so what we're going to do first is get a really good grounding in exactly what the court said and why it said it. And then you'll, in a sense, be able to make up your own minds about how the courts have dealt with it since then. So let's first have a look at the background facts. And we can draw them together quite quickly. The situation was that the claimant had a back problem, and she was told by her neurosurgeon that she should have surgery for that problem. And she didn't really want to, but she was willing to follow the advice of the professional. Unfortunately, the surgery led to her developing a very serious condition, which many of you will be familiar with, called cauda equina. But that was not because there was actually a problem with how the surgery was done. It was just one of those things. What was really important was that the surgeon had not warned her that that might be something which could happen. The risk was about 1% to 2%, but given how serious cauda equina is, it was, now we would say in Montgomery terms, it was most certainly a material risk. But the question was, what do we do about causation? And the reason that this was an issue was that the claimant had been really quite candid and quite honest in her evidence, and she accepted that even if she'd been told about the risk, she wasn't able to say she would not have had the surgery. And that was because it was a very serious back problem. The medical advice was very much in favour of surgery. And ultimately, a 2% risk sounds very serious when it actually eventuates. But when we step back in time, at the time that you're being warned about it, she wasn't able to say it would have been enough to have actually caused her to decide to go for an alternative. And the finding was not that she would have avoided the surgery, but only that she would have gone back, she would have taken a bit more advice, and she would have thought about some other options. The other important finding of the court was that having the surgery on another day, as seems to have been the likely hypothetical chain of events, would not actually have made it any less likely that she would have developed cauda equina had it taken place that day. So what was the issue that the court had to decide? Now, the issue of law was framed differently by the different judges. And first, I'll ask you to cast your eyes at the decision of Lord Hope, who gave what's probably the leading judgment for the majority because it's the longest. And he sets it out like this. I wonder if my tone of voice, if I read it, will help you see how it is that in the way that we frame an issue can be very important in terms of how we find the answer to it. Because Lord Hope says, the question which arises is whether it was sufficient to prove that if properly warned, she would not have consented to the operation which was in fact performed. So he's framing it as the operation which was performed in the absence of that warning was something different from the operation which would have been performed had she been given the warning. Now, of course, the defendant would say that just because the operation is being performed on another day and the claimant knows that there's a risk associated with it, how can we say that that makes it a different operation? And we will see that now when we look at the way Lord Hoffman framed it. And he was dissenting. And he says, the claimant argued as a matter of law, it was sufficient that she would have not have had the operation at that time or by that surgeon, even though the evidence was that the risk could have been precisely the same. So he's putting the situation in a totally different way. You might almost wonder if you're reading about the same case with the way that the judges have framed the actual issue that they were asked to decide. But in a sense, the point of contention between the majority and the minority in this decision was the operation which took place different from the operation which would have taken place had there been proper consenting beforehand. In terms of the result, it was a very close result. And if we go back in time, the High Court had found for the claimant. What's interesting is the High Court decision wasn't even reported. So you can see how something that initially doesn't seem to be all that exciting can turn out to generate a whole new area of clinical negligence law. But the High Court said that the surgery was not identical in the hypothetical case, and she would have avoided that operation. So it took an analysis which I think you can see broadly accords with the way that Lord Hope framed the issue. The Court of Appeal, with Lady Hale in the Court of Appeal, upheld that decision. I found the way the Court of Appeal framed it quite interesting. What they said in the end was ultimately this was about causative responsibility. And they said it wouldn't be just for the defendant to be able to escape liability because really the causative responsibility was with the doctor for failing to warn about the risk rather than with the fact that this thing could have happened on any day. A somewhat different way of explaining the same conclusion. But anyway, when it came to the House of Lords, it was a 3-2 split. And just to pause here, you can see, and in a sense, I think this is quite exciting for lawyers, because you can see how, really, things can turn on very fine margins, and a huge amount of case law in the appeal courts would never have been created had it not been that three judges had gone this way. And it may well have been relevant, the skills of the barristers and solicitors acting on that case for the claimant in managing to persuade the judges. Let's look at why it was that they came to the decision that they did. And Lord Hope roots his decision really in policy terms. He does something which you can sort of get away with when you're in the top court in the country, but which is difficult to do when you're a judge in a lower court. He essentially, if you stand back and look at what he's doing with that reasoning, he's essentially saying, it really feels to me as though this claimant deserves to be able to recover. And so I'm going to find a way to help that happen. And I'm going to translate each of these paragraphs on the slide into normal English. So bullet point number one, what he's saying is, it would be really disappointing if we can't find a way to give her a remedy. Bullet point number two, he's saying that the doctor ought to have warned her about the injury, and it's important that the injury which actually took place was the very injury that she wasn't warned about. And then number three, really, again, Lord Hope is saying, this is a really unusual case and we're going to break the rules because we need to find a reason that this claimant should succeed. Because it's sort of a bit naughty to say that causation is tied up in an issue of policy, because someone like Lord Hoffman in the minority would have said, well, ultimately you have to just apply the law as it is. And unfortunately, the law doesn't always give the result that we might want. And then finally, and we get to the punchline, and Lord Hope says, the normal approach to causation would render the duty useless in a case where it is needed most, because the function of the law is to enable rights to be vindicated and to provide remedies where duties have been breached. And so his conclusion is that it would really be a hollow duty if we can't find a reason that there should be liability in this case. And he quite honestly says, on policy grounds, therefore, I hold that this test of causation is satisfied in this case. Now, again, to play devil's advocate, a person on the other side of that position would say, well, it's not empty, because at the end of the day, if we take a different case, if we have a situation where there is a breach of duty, but there isn't causation made out because, for example, there's a failure to discover that someone's got cancer, and that means that they have, later on, when the cancer is discovered, they have to go through very serious chemotherapy. Well, they still wouldn't have a claim if it turns out that actually, even if there had been no delay, the cancer would have been just as serious. So a defendant might say, well, it's no answer to say that just because there's been a breach, there needs to be liability. But I think the view of Lord Hope was that there is something really important about the idea that you need to be warned of the risk, which then eventuates. And so he's able to say that that gives a reason to take us away from the normal, the usual rule on causation. So if we draw it together, and this is sort of my attempt to set out what you could call the ratio of Chester and Afshar, but it's not really that satisfactory. You'll see the way I've drafted it is really it's a bit of lawyer's drafting, because look at that word may. A clinician may be liable when that risk eventuates. And what that tells us is not really an awful lot, because it's giving us what you might describe as the necessary components of liability under Chester and Afshar principles. But it's not telling us what and when will be sufficient in a given case. So that word may is a very weighty one. So we do have a question that was left unanswered. Lord Steyne says, also giving judgment with the majority, that this is a narrow and modest departure from traditional causation principles. And he's flagging up there, I think, he's already implying to future courts, you should be very careful about using this decision in future cases. As you will see, they were very careful about using it. And on the other hand, they don't go into detail about what you do need to meet Chester and Afshar principles. So one hypothetical which hasn't arisen in the cases that I'm aware of is, what would it have been like if everything had been exactly the same as the Chester and Afshar scenario, but instead of having the surgery taking place 3 days later, she would have taken more advice and it would have taken place 4 hours later? Do we think that would have been a different surgery or not? I suspect that different people have different views.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.